Community acquired pneumonia has a big burden on the healthcare community, the population at large. Probably 5 or 6 million cases a year, about 20% of which get hospitalized, which is over a million, million and a half patients. 50,000 patients per year die of pneumonia. That actually turns out to be about one every, six every hour. So in the time that we've been sitting here talking about these things, probably six people have died in the United States from community-acquired pneumonia. So it's a pretty burdensome disease. It tends to affect very young, under 1 year of age, when the immune system is not developed. And then again, over the age of 60, you see sort of this logarithmic increase in frequency in terms of population per density, cases per population, as well as mortality rates. So depending on where you are in the population, and that those speak really to the you know, the immune status of the population. And as the patients are becoming increasingly older, more frail, more comorbid, more immunocompromised, we're only going to see the burden of community-acquired pneumonia increase over time. Community-acquired pneumonia can occur all year. However, we do know that there are particular months that are more problematic, depending on where you are geographically. There's a abstract in this meeting from New York, I believe it's Queens, New York, looking at patients are in the winter, most likely to be older, hospitalized. Readmissions for pneumonia tend to be more often in the spring in their cohort. But we do know, for example, we've known for years that in seasons where there's a lot of respiratory virus burden, RSV, flu in particular, now we have COVID in the picture, that the viral followed by bacterial pneumonia, sort of the 1-2 punch, tends to be more problematic. And 1 year that becomes problematic, that it's particularly problematic for me, I remember before COVID, the winter of 2019 to 2020 year, we saw a lot of Staph aureus pneumonias that year, including MRSA community-acquired pneumonias, which are not typically considered to be very common. But that particular year, we saw a lot of them driven by the high amount numbers of flu. So if there's a lot of flu, a lot of RSV, a lot of respiratory virus in a particular year, you will see a lot of Staph pneumonias, strep pneumonia, pneumonias. And you can predict, sort of make a guess if someone has one of these Staph aureus pneumonias based on how sick they are. If someone comes to the hospital and they are in the ICU and are ventilated, particularly if they're younger, their chances of having a Staph aureus pneumonia is increased, compared to baseline. And so it would be important to make sure that Staph aureus is covered in those particular patients, particularly because our first-line agents, quinolones, ceftriaxone, for example, that are most commonly dispensed as, CABP drugs in the healthcare, in hospital settings, they're not the greatest Staph aureus agents. So to keep that in mind. The considerations for whether you pick a single agent or a combination therapy for community-acquired pneumonia depends on what agent's going to be used and whether it's empiric or focused. And so an empiric regimen, a fluoroquinolone, frequently is deployed as a single agent because you're going to get your pneumococcal and atypical coverage simultaneously. If you are going to use a cephalosporin for your pneumococcal agent, then you then have to add a second agent for your atypical coverage because there's no atypical coverage with ceftriaxone or ceftaroline, for example, if that's your beta-lactam. If you have a younger patient who has low severity of illness and no comorbidities and is an outpatient, you will potentially can use just a doxycycline or azithromycin monotherapy. Will you use combination therapy in a focused setting? It is rare, but example, I've seen cases where we have a Staph aureus pneumonia with toxin-producing features, toxic shock. So we typically will use, a cephalosporin, like ceftaroline, for example, oral anazolid with clindamycin if it's a cephalosporin for toxin inhibition. But that's uncommon. The elderly patient considerations for the treatment of community-acquired pneumonia is a very important one, given that the majority of burden of disease, both in number of density of cases per population, as well as the mortality rate, is higher in the elderly population. So those patients warrant more aggressive treatment. What that essentially means is more aggressive more reliable pneumococcal coverage. So typically that will be, you know, in most cases, you know, when patients get admitted by a hospitalist, it's something like ceftriaxone, something maybe a fluoroquinolone. Their fluoroquinolones are being moved away from now because of the risk of C. diff, so they're highly discouraged, particularly in the inpatient setting. The problem with those regimens is that, you know, C. difficile is a big concern, as well as some drug interactions, particularly with the quinolone class. If a patient comes in and I'm worried about a Staph aureus pneumonia, meaning one of the biggest predictors of a Staph aureus community-acquired pneumonia is being in the ICU and or on a ventilator within the first 24 to 48 hours of admission, those patients are enriched heavily for Staph aureus pneumonia. So for in those patients, we typically will you know, want to cover MRSA, and that's either going to be with ceftaroline or linezolid alongside your atypical coverage that you would give in that setting. Community-acquired pneumonia, the challenges we have are that our first-line agents are, in fact, not as reliable as we think. In fact, there's a poster from JMI Labs at this meeting showing, you know, penicillin resistance, you know, in the 35% range, macrolide resistant in the 50% range, tetracycline resistant in the 20 to 25% range. So these are agents that are sort of relied as first-line agents to treat, you know, pneumococcus, which is the real concerning pathogen in terms of resistance. We don't see too much MDR, XDR, community-acquired pneumonia organisms, you know, unless the patient has had a lot of antibiotic exposure. They happen to be a cystic fibrosis patient or something like that, and that technically wouldn't even qualify as a community-acquired pneumonia. That's more of a healthcare associated. So the resistance concern really centers around the strep pneumo. The good thing is for penicillin seems to be pretty stable, but in terms of the other agents, doxycycline, tetracyclines, macrolides, clearly not reliable and certainly reflective of the fact that we're not giving azithromycin and doxycycline as first-line agents in people with high risk. For having pneumococcal pneumonia. We usually reserve those for the younger patients who might tend to have more atypicals. Or if they are a younger patient, remember, when you're treating a patient, the net antimicrobial effect against an infection is the patient's immune system plus the antibiotic. If you have an antibiotic that's C, you know, C plus, B minus, like a macrolide or a tetracycline against pneumococcus, if the patient has a robust immune system, you might be able to overcome it. Versus an elderly patient who needs, you know, a lot more burden of the effect on the drug, and you really can't afford a B plus, C minus, or so antibiotic like the ones I mentioned, and you really have to get more reliable coverage with a ceftriaxone, a quinolone, ceftaroline, things like that, a linezolid, where you're going to cover your pneumococcus more effectively. The question of stewardship and pharmacoeconomics is a challenging one in the pneumonia space, simply by the large volume of patients that we're faced or we're treating. You know, if we were treating a disease that's pretty rare, the economic situations and stewardship considerations are, you know, less of a concern. However, pneumonia is such a common disease, millions of people presenting annually, probably a million people admitted. You know, that you do have to pay attention to those factors. With that said, however, sometimes using generics isn't necessarily the most effective way to go. Just like, for example, you know, getting from your home to your job, walking might be far more economic, but it may not be the most efficient. So you wind up spending more time, and you know, you're less efficient. In you know, so by investing some money, you know, in a drug, you can sometimes, you know, gather, you know, more efficiency. So that's always a challenge. I think this is one of the areas of stewardship that needs a lot more focus. With stewardship, I think cutting durations of therapy as short as possible, I think, is a big, big step that we can do. I think a lot of patients with pneumonia do not need, you know, week-long therapy. They can be treated much shorter. And finding, you know, being aggressive and shortening durations of therapy is going to be key in not just economics, but also in terms of stewardship and antibiotic exposure. Just overall, just looking at, you know, individually, a patient who is immunocompromised needs all the help they can get from a pharmacologic agent. One example, for example, is ceftaroline. We know is the most potent in vitro antimicrobial against strep pneumo that we have. In some patients, it may be more cost effective to give them ceftaroline, even though pharmacoeconomically, from a drug acquisition cost, it may not, it may be more expensive. So instead of giving them an agent that is less potent, those patients will have longer time to clinical response, longer time in the hospital, versus hitting them with the best agent you have up front. And then you can, get the patient moving out of the hospital in a more efficient manner, because, again, each day, most of our medical costs from an economic standpoint are, hospital days, the hotel charge of being in the hospital. It's not the drug. Drug costs are about 5% of total costs. So while we do have to pay attention to drug costs, we have to keep in mind they're just a drop in the bucket of a patient who's actually in the hospital. There are persistent unmet needs in community-acquired pneumonia, I think, really reflect on the fact that we really have to get a better handle on how to be more nuanced with our antibiotic prescribing. Remember, pneumonia is not just about killing bacteria. It's about killing bacteria, but also perhaps mitigating inflammation in the lungs. Because the reason pneumonia causes such a great morbidity, in most instances, and mortality, is not because we can't get rid of the organism. It's because the lung is such a fragile space. I mean, the alveolus is a air sac with very thin membrane where gas exchange occurs. You get oxygen going from the air into the circulation and carbon dioxide going in reverse. When you can go in and kill the bacteria, but if that comes at the price of a massive inflammatory reaction, you have ARDS set in. And many of us who treat patients, many times remember we see a patient in the ER with a bad-looking X-ray, but they're talking to you, and then you put them on antibiotics, and a day or two later, they're on a ventilator for 2 weeks with ARDS. And so I think the unmet need is, I think in addition to the resistance issues that we talked about earlier, really getting a better handle on mitigating the inflammation, and perhaps at least me, I'm more sensitive to this fact by what COVID was. I mean, COVID, as we all know, the inflammation from the virus was actually worse than the virus itself. And so mitigating that inflammatory response and getting better studies on how do we do that, whether it's antitoxin antibiotics or other anti-inflammatory agents, I think that's a big unmet need in managing the disease. Some key takeaways on community-acquired pneumonia from this particular conference. One, I encourage people to look at the resistance among pneumococcus from the GMI study, reiterating the, doxycycline, tetracycline, quinolone, omadacycline susceptibility of strep pneumo. There was another study that I think caught my attention looking at bronchial alveolar fluid neutrophil count as a biomarker of illness severity. Patients who had greater than 80% neutrophils on their BAL fluid had higher morbidity, meaning longer length of ICU stay, more ventilator days, as opposed to those who had less than 80%. Again, speaking to the comments earlier about the importance of the inflammatory response in pneumonia and driving disease, and using that either as a biomarker to which we can treat patients differently and or addressing the anti-inflammatory needs of some of these patients.